was an extremely courageous decision on the part of President Trump. We believe the North Korean leader is now taking stock.
And that is one reason the South Koreans are saying Kim Jong-un has been silent about a proposed meeting with President Trump. This is Tuesday, March 20th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. Please join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, a meeting of Southeast Asian nations mulls over the Myanmar Rohingya situation. We examine the newest hierarchy in the Chinese government. All on today's VOA Asia. Diplomatic efforts are intensifying to coordinate the logistics and agendas for expected North Korea summits with South Korea and then with the United States to work out a deal to end the North's nuclear weapons program. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un opened the door to nuclear disarmament talks by agreeing to an inter-Korean summit with South Korean leader Moon Jae-in and extending an invitation to meet with U.S. President Donald Trump. Kim agreed to discuss ending his country's threatening nuclear arms program, which in the past year has accelerated efforts to develop an intercontinental ballistic missile that could target the U.S. mainland, and to hold off on further provocative weapons testing while talks are underway. President Trump's decision to agree to denuclearization talks by the end of May caught allies and adversaries by surprise. The Trump administration, however, has said that its hardline maximum pressure campaign would remain in place until a deal is reached. Under Trump, the U.S. has led international efforts to impose increasing economic sanctions on the North and has stressed that military action is also a viable option to end the growing nuclear threat. North Korea has not yet confirmed its participation in either summit, but South Korean Foreign Minister Kang Kyung-hwa said on Sunday that the leadership in Pyongyang is still trying to formulate its response to Trump's sudden embrace of diplomacy.
I think we were all quite surprised by the readiness of that decision. I think it was an extremely courageous decision on the part of President Trump. We believe the North Korean leader is now taking stock.
Now, the South Korean foreign minister said on the CBS program Face the Nation that she's not troubled by the fact that Kim Jong-un's commitment to engage in denuclearization talks has so far only been communicated through a high-level South Korean envoy who met with the North Korean leader.
But the significance of his word is quite weighty in the sense that this is the first time that the words came directly from the North Korean supreme leader himself, and that has never been done before.
Another indication that a U.S.-North Korea summit is in the planning stages is that North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho visited his Swedish counterpart Margot Wallström over the weekend for security talks. Ri's visit has generated speculation that Stockholm may host the Trump-Kim summit. Many analysts say Trump should seek a neutral summit site for both leaders to be on equal diplomatic footing and to withhold a U.S. presidential visit to Pyongyang, one that would greatly enhance the legitimacy of the Kim government until after significant denuclearization concessions are made. South Korean media also reported that there was progress made toward releasing three Americans being held in custody in North Korea during the talks in Sweden. Meanwhile, in San Francisco over the weekend, top national security advisors from the United States, South Korea, and Japan also met to discuss the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, according to South Korea's presidential Blue House. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. The top U.S. military commander in Afghanistan says a combination of religious, social, diplomatic, and military pressure will be applied to the Taliban this year to force them to start negotiating for peace in that war-torn country. An independent study has questioned the veracity of U.S. claims in recent counterterrorism airstrikes in northeastern Afghanistan targeted support structures of anti-China militants. And the mainly Catholic Philippines took a first big step toward legalizing divorce Monday when the lower house of Congress passed a bill. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. The ASEAN summit has ended in Australia. Over the weekend, hundreds of protesters gathered in Sydney to condemn human rights abuses in Southeast Asia. There was criticism inside the ASEAN summit, too, for Myanmar's treatment of Rohingya Muslims. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
There right now to attending ASEAN summit.
Anger over human rights abuses brought Australia's Vietnamese, Burmese and Filipino communities together in the centre of Sydney. Cambodian demonstrators defied an extraordinary threat from outspoken Prime Minister Hun Sen, who said he would assault those who planned to burn his effigy. There have been no reports of violence during the two-day summit. Inside the meeting, Malaysia's Prime Minister criticised Myanmar State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi. Najib Razak said her government's treatment of Rohingya Muslims had made them vulnerable to radicalisation by terrorists because they had no hope for the future. It's rare for ASEAN leaders to openly voice such disapproval of fellow members. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingyas have sought refuge in neighbouring Bangladesh after fleeing violence and destruction of their homes in Myanmar's Rakhine State. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has said Aung San Suu Kyi addressed the controversy during private talks with other Southeast Asian leaders in Sydney. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the plight of the Rohingyas must be quickly resolved.
Our goal is to support a peaceful and speedy resolution of the humanitarian problems, the humanitarian disaster, truthfully.
Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong says despite regional concerns over the Rohingya crisis, it's Myanmar's problem to solve.
It's of concern to all ASEAN countries, and yet ASEAN is not able to intervene and to force an outcome.
Security, counter-terrorism and trade have also been major topics at this year's ASEAN summit. There was also discussion of China's territorial advances in the South China Sea, but there was no explicit criticism of Beijing from ASEAN members. Australia isn't part of the 10-nation group, but is a so-called dialogue partner and is hosting the event for the first time. A leader statement said Australia was a vital partner to enhance the region's security and prosperity. Analysts say ASEAN lacks real teeth for collective bargaining because its members refuse to compromise their national interests. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Bangladesh's Supreme Court Monday halted the release of opposition leader Khalida Zia on bail, deepening a political crisis ahead of a national election due in December. A visit by Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov to Vietnam was abruptly called off Monday for unexpected reasons at Hanoi, hours after President Putin was re-elected for a fourth term in Russia. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you are with us. Monday, China's leadership underwent a transformation, with Foreign Minister Wang Yi keeping his portfolio while adding the title State Councillor. The 64-year-old Wang, in his post since 2013, now holds the two top diplomatic posts. General Wei Feng-hui was elevated to defense minister. He was formerly the head of China's Strategic Missile Force. Meanwhile, U.S.-educated Yi Gang was appointed chairman of the Central Bank, the People's Bank of China, while President Xi Jinping's top economic advisor, Liu He, was named vice premier. The changes followed the National People's Congress votes extending Premier Li Keqiang's tenure and giving President Xi indefinite rule. Meanwhile, the U.S. Treasury's top economic diplomat, David Malpass, expressed concern about what he called growing state control of China's economy. He urged Beijing to move toward freedom and market orientation. Shane Oliver, the chief economist at the Sydney-based AMP Capital, told VOA's Victor Beatty that China would argue it is only doing the kind of things other economies have.
There was the share market volatility we saw back in 2015, intervention to try and stabilize the share market. And likewise, on the currency front, there were some moves there to try and stabilize things. And of course, more recently, I think there was an issue with a Chinese insurance company where the government intervened. I can sort of understand where he's coming from, but bear in mind that the Chinese were intervening on the currency to try and stop the Chinese renminbi from falling. You go back to 2015, 2016, and I think the Chinese currency fell, it would actually be more annoying to the Americans because it would mean the US dollar would go up. And I guess in a broader sense, you could sort of argue, well, the Chinese will probably shoot back and say, well, you know, we've done those things to try and stabilize our economy through tough times. You and the US and Europe and Japan have intervened with quantitative easing to try and stabilize things. It's not altogether different. And also, we've recently had these issues around tariffs, which are an intervention in the free market system. So I guess the Chinese could fight back on this one.
Malpass also criticized China's investment rules, restricting access for foreign firms. He said this is completely unworkable and non-reciprocal arrangement.
Yeah, I think there's long been issues around the Chinese investment rules. You know, there's a feeling that Chinese businesses are free to buy whatever they want to in will have less restrictions on them when buying into the US or other countries around the world where there are those restrictions coming into China. To some degree, I can sort of understand where that concern is coming from, and I would hope that in time China will move in a more liberal direction on that front, and I think they probably will. I guess, though, we have to also allow that many Western countries had restrictions on inbound investment that were only removed completely once those economies had developed a lot more than China has today. So, yes, China has those restrictions there, but don't forget, in the West, many countries did have similar restrictions up until recent decades.
Shane, on the matter of tariffs, as you mentioned, no fewer than 45 U.S. trade associations representing some of the largest companies in the U.S. urged President Donald Trump not to impose tariffs on China, warning it would be particularly harmful to the U.S. economy and to consumers.
Well, the unfortunate thing about tariffs is that they do mean increased prices to consumers, or if they're upstream in the production process, something that might be a key input into a good manufacturer in the US, it does increase prices to businesses, which again can mean higher prices for consumers. And they're worried that their costs will go up in response to tariffs, and that will make them less competitive and mean higher prices for US consumers. And that indeed has been the history of tariffs. They often sound like a sensible way to protect American workers, but at the end of the day, you end up paying higher prices and end up being worse off.
Shane Oliver said the biggest threat to U.S. employment in the long term is not China, but robots and automation, and the imposition of tariffs won't fix that problem. And he said with the U.S. economy running at full capacity, tariffs will only mean higher prices for American consumers. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, China has formed a new economic team as President Xi kicks off his second term. Reports say North Korea is in talks to free U.S. detainees as diplomacy escalates. South Korean prosecutors seek the arrest of ex-president Lee Myung-bak over corruption allegations on the grounds he might destroy evidence if he isn't detained. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is indeed VOA Asia. We continue now. An independent study has questioned the veracity of U.S. claims its recent counterterrorism airstrikes in northeastern Afghanistan targeted support structures of anti-China militants. Kabul-based Afghanistan Analyst Network said Monday its investigation into last month's bombing raids in Badakhshan has found no credible evidence that Uyghur extremists used the province as a training ground or base to plan attacks. A February 6 U.S. military statement, backed by video images, asserted that its precision airstrikes in the province disrupted planning and rehearsal of terrorist acts by militants linked to the East Turkestan Islamic Movement, or the ETIM. China accuses ETIM of being behind terrorist attacks in the country, especially in its border province of Xinjiang. The military group claims to be fighting for independence of ethnic Uyghur Muslims in the Chinese province. When contacted by VOA for his reaction to the report, U.S. military spokesman Captain Tom Gresbach said in Kabul said, "We will look into this matter and respond to you just as soon as we can." Beijing has long alleged ETIM militants have ties to extremist groups operating out of border areas of Afghanistan and Pakistan and use the two countries for plotting terrorist attacks against China. Governments need to rely more on green water management to ensure a healthy planet and meet the needs of a fast-growing global population. That is one of the messages in a new study by the UN's cultural and scientific organization, UNESCO. Launched at a World Water Conference in Brazil, the study considers the many benefits of natural water infrastructure, like wetlands, urban gardens, and sustainable farming practices.
Population growth, changing consumption patterns, and development are taking their toll on the world's water supplies. Water demand is increasing by about 1% a year, even as climate change, pollution, and erosion threaten its quality and availability. But until now, most countries have relied on traditional man-made water management systems, such as reservoirs, irrigation canals, and water treatment plants. A new UNESCO report finds that very little investment has gone into greener water management options, despite their many benefits.
Green solutions can meet several water management objectives at the same time, improving water quality, but also reducing floods or droughts, improving access to water. So there's multiple benefits outside the water sector.
Stefan Uhlenbrock is coordinator of UNESCO's World Water Assessment Program, which authored the study.
Green solutions can help to store carbon, create jobs, particularly in rural environments. They can also increase the biodiversity, which is also very essential.
The goal, UNESCO says, is not to scrap traditional water management options like dikes, but instead to strike the right balance between man-made systems and those relying more on Mother Nature. Some places are starting to do that. New York City saves hundreds of millions of dollars yearly in water treatment and maintenance by protecting vast natural watersheds. China plans to build pilot initiatives that recycle rainwater for urban consumption. Some communities are building artificial wetlands to fight flooding and pollution. Others, like the Indian state of Rajasthan, have adopted more sustainable soil and water management practices that boost harvests and fight drought, growing challenges in the future.
We have to grow some 50% more food in the next 30 to 40 years. So to do that, we have to think of how can we do that without cutting more forests, cutting more trees, and trying to develop more land, which is hardly possible in many places around the world.
Experts say greener water management can help to increase agricultural production by 20%, which may prove key in feeding a global population expected to reach nearly 10 billion by 2050. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
We continue now on VOA Asia. The maximum security prison known as Sing Sing lies about 80 kilometers north of New York City. It is not the sort of place you'd expect to find a flourishing music community. However, reporter Jeff London went there to observe a workshop Carnegie Hall runs for the inmates. And some of their songs were performed last week on Carnegie Hall's main stage.
Sing Sing Correctional Facility opened in 1828, and there's still a kind of Victorian severity to it, from the rusty iron bars to the dimly lit corridors, where prisoners in drab green jumpsuits are led by guards who now communicate by walkie-talkie. There are 1,600 inmates at Sing Sing, and Deputy Superintendent for Program Services, Leslie Mallon, says the staff is always thinking about the day they'll get released.
Because most of the inmates are going to go home and be your neighbor and be my neighbor at some point. So we assess them and we take a look at what are some of the things that they need before they go. We have an associate's degree program, a bachelor's degree program, a master's degree program.
And a music program. Twice a month, artists from New York City come to Sing Sing and spend a day giving the 30 inmates enrolled in the Musical Connections program formal training. Before it started 9 years ago, Sing Sing had a music room. But Rob, the Department of Corrections, asks that we don't use any last names or say what brought these men to prison, says there were often fights about who could use the room.
Where we had fragmented fighting groups, now all these guys are part of this weird cohesive thing where we have to play together and we're all of a sudden we're doing an instant duet, me and somebody who hates me.
If black lives matter, who do they matter to?
Rob has been on parole for the last year and a half after spending 7 years in Sing Sing. He played just 2 open mics before he went in. Joe had even less experience.
I didn't know what an A-flat was. I've heard these terms. I couldn't have explained them to you. I didn't know what they sounded like. I didn't know what they meant. Or what does it mean to be? What does it mean that A is flat? Don't know.
But he's been in the program for 4 years, studying music theory and harmony, and even got to work with opera star Joyce DiDonato.
She definitely opened my eyes to something that I didn't even know I had within myself. After I met Joyce and I started to actually listen to classical music, because before that, I didn't listen to any classical music.
Now he collects opera scores and is writing one of his own. The Musical Connections program is run by Carnegie Hall's Manuel Bogoro, who oversees similar programs in shelters and community centers.
People have come together, they play together, they negotiate artistic decisions, they sort out problems, but all with enormous affection for music.
And those are all skills that inmates can use on the outside. Danny was released from Sing Sing 3.5 years ago after 7 years in the prison system. He learned the violin and started writing music.
After being released from prison, I was able to take that same drive and the same dedication that it takes to learn a musical instrument and to compose into other areas of my life.
But I'm the way things are is not the way that it has to be. No, I'm holding on to love, holding off despair, and I'm holding out hope. I'm holding on to love, holding off despair, and I'm holding out hope.
That's a song by Kenyatta, who's been in Sing Sing for the past 23 years. One of the teaching artists, Sarah Elizabeth Charles, says she's seen both personal and musical growth in the prisoners over the years.
I just think the sky's the limit for so many of the men in this workshop. Many of them are working on a level of a professional musician, and that's really huge, and yeah, sky's the limit.
For the members of the workshop who have been released from Sing Sing, Carnegie Hall hosts a monthly gathering, says Rob.
It showed me that everybody was struggling, trying to find a job, trying to stay employed, trying to find time to practice in this hectic life. I knew I wasn't alone in any of those things.
When you feel you're getting tired, when you feel...
And like other members of the Musical Connections program who are out of prison, Rob's been getting his life together. He's working as a bike messenger, he's gotten married, and he plays various musical gigs around town. For VOA News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Let us hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook. And our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, as always. Engineer Zeynab Abdulrahman. Managing director, Diane Gao. And our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.